I greet you at the beginning of another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired word, and invite you to join me in 1 Kings chapter number 9. We'll begin at verse 26 in a bit. And the parallel that you should keep ready, if you're capable of doing so, 2 Chronicles chapter 8, verse 17. So we have arrived at the 24th year of King Solomon's solo reign. It's the 20th year since, 24th year of his reign since his father David made him king, and his 20th year since he started his solo reign. The temple is finished. His palace complex is finished. The walls around the new addition to the city of Jerusalem are finished. And so we are now settling into the second half of the kingdom of Solomon. And everything is amazing. And it's getting even more amazing as we push forward. And so Solomon decides that he needs to extend his connections, his communications even farther than what he already has. Now, he already has a territory control that stretches from the Gulf of Aqaba to the south. That's one of the arms of the Red Sea. It stretches from there all the way up to that bend that is in the Euphrates River, and from the Mediterranean coast all the way to the empty quarter of what is modern-day Saudi Arabia, the deep desert. That is his empire. That is what he has direct control upon. But he's making connections beyond that, all around his empire. And some of that he's doing by sea. And that's what comes up next. Verse 26 of 1 Kings 9. King Solomon built a fleet of ships at Ezion-Geber, which is near Elot, on the shore of the Red Sea in the land of Edom. Now, this is the Gulf of Aqaba that we're talking about here. So it's the extreme south of his empire, and it is a port city. And so he gets the assistance of Hiram and builds some ships. Now, the Phoenicians were known for being big builders. They could do the big quarry stones, they could do the big timbers, but they also could really build big, sturdy ships and sail them. In fact, they sailed them in the Mediterranean, and they sailed them here in the Red Sea area. So Solomon has commissioned Hiram to help him have his own fleet of ships. So Hiram sent with the fleet his servants, seamen who were familiar with the sea, together with the servants of Solomon. And they went to Ophir and brought from there gold, 420 talents, and they brought it to King Solomon. Now, the Chronicles passage says that they brought 450 talents of gold. Now, each talent is about 75 pounds. So this is many tons of gold, many millions, tens of millions of dollars of value that we're talking here. And we'll talk more about this turning into a regular trade trip that takes about 3 years to complete in its total. Now, where is Ophir? No one knows for sure. There's a lot of guessing. Some believed that it was as far away as Indonesia. just off the subcontinent of India. Others think that it's probably someplace like Zimbabwe in the southeastern portion of Africa. But again, nobody knows for sure, only that these ships went out on a regular basis to do trading. But they definitely went south. We know that for a fact. Because from the Gulf of Aqaba, they would have traveled south until they hit the main arm of the Red Sea. They would have gone through the Horn of Africa area and out into the Indian Ocean. And so that's all southward. Now, in the process, they would have passed by the southern end of the Arabian Peninsula. And it is guessed, and I think it's probably pretty accurate, that that is where the country of Sheba was located, where Yemen is today, is where the ancient country of Sheba was located. And that's where our next story comes from. So my guess is that as Solomon's fleets were plying their trade along the coastline of the Gulf of Aqaba and then the Red Sea and then into the Indian Ocean, that the Queen of Sheba came into contact with all these stories about the grand empire of King Solomon and his amazing capital city of Jerusalem. And these buildings that were the most expensive buildings per cubic foot ever built in the history of the world. As I've told you on multiple occasions, because these buildings were destroyed not too terribly long after they were built. So they were finished in 958. And we know that the city of Jerusalem was obliterated in 587. So 400 years in the history of the world, not terribly long. So these amazing buildings were destroyed long before some of those lists of the great wonders of the ancient world were put together. If they'd lasted, they would have made the list beyond any doubt. But they didn't. But the Queen of Sheba hears about all of this. 1 Kings chapter 10. Now when the Queen of Sheba heard of the fame of Solomon concerning the name of he who is. So it's not just about Solomon. It's about the fact that he received his kingdom from this God named Yahweh, this very powerful being whom Solomon built a magnificent temple for, and that Solomon was blessed by this God with wisdom and wealth beyond imagination, and that he used this wealth to build this amazing city complex. So when she heard all of this, she came to test him with hard questions. Because remember, she heard that God had given him great wisdom, the ability to unravel mysteries. So, verse 2, she came to Jerusalem with a very large retinue, with camels bearing spices and very much gold and precious stones. So when you come to meet someone, queen to king, you bring presents. And because both of them are very wealthy, you bring very wealthy presents. So when she came to Solomon, she told him all that was on her heart, meaning she quizzed him. She had brought all of these knotty questions, these difficult puzzles. And Solomon answered all her questions. There was nothing hidden from the king that he could not explain to her. So he passed her test with flying colors. But keep in mind, she is also now in the city of Jerusalem. She's in the place she's heard about. She has been in the palace. She has been in the great facility known as the Forest of Lebanon, with all of those tree trunks that are holding up the roof. She's seen all of that. She's seen the temple covered in gold, made of massive stones. She has seen all of the people working for Solomon. She has seen the order of worship. So she's seen everything in Jerusalem. So back to the text. Verse 4 again. When the queen of Sheba had seen all the wisdom of Solomon, the house that he had built. Now that's God's house, probably in mind first, but also his complex for his own work. The food on his table. Remember I described the idea of the palace being like a top end hotel with a multiple top stars restaurant. What is that? Michelin approved restaurant, a place that most of us couldn't afford to even have an appetizer in. So that's happening day by day as visitors come in to meet with Solomon. So she got to eat in that restaurant, in that dining facility. So she saw the food and tasted all the food on his table, the seating of his officials, because he's got all his people with him on a regular basis here at the restaurant, at the dining facility, and the attendance of his servants, their clothing, because the servants are really dressed up too, his cupbearers, so they've no doubt got a whole bunch of vintages of wine laid in. And the cupbearers are more like sommeliers, the ones that are experts in wine. You know, which wine goes with what food, which region do you want, you know, what taste are you looking for, that sort of thing. So that's his cupbearers. And his burnt offerings that he offered at the house of He Who Is. So, you know, there's at least two public worship services every day that Solomon attends, the morning worship, the evening worship. And so he takes her along with that. And she sees all that grandeur that's involved. I wonder, and this is just me spitballing here, I wonder whether or not at this time the divine presence of God is still radiating in the temple. That there may still be a cloud of God's glory that is perpetually over the shrine building itself. And if that were the case, she would have seen that too. And so once she's seen and experienced all of this, there was no breath in her. So she was left breathless. She said to the king, "The report is true that I heard in my own land of your words and of your wisdom, but I did not believe the reports until I came and my own eyes have seen it." So it was like too hard to believe. It was just too far out there for me to believe it. But now I came and I've seen it with my own eyes, and behold, she testifies, the half was not told me. So she has to confess, I thought it was crazy talk to begin with. I thought everybody was exaggerating. But once I got here and I saw it for myself, I had to come to the conclusion that they weren't even telling me the full story. Your wisdom and your prosperity surpass the report that I heard. Happy are your men. They're very, very blessed to work for you. And happy are your servants who continually stand before you and hear your wisdom. So they are all blessed. All these people that get to spend every day with you are so blessed to be in your presence, to receive all of this. And then verse 9, blessed be he who is your God, who is delighted in you and set you on the throne of Israel. So she acknowledges the divine establishment of Solomon's kingdom, his throne. Because he who has loved Israel forever, he has made you king, that you may execute justice and righteousness. So she acknowledges that God put you here for his purposes and has blessed you in the midst of all of this. Now, does this mean that she became a believer in the one true God? Possibly, but not guaranteed. One of the problems that we run into in the ancient histories is that many of these foreign nationals that had contact with Israel, they had their own gods and goddesses that they worshipped, and they had no problem folding in another god into their pantheon. And it's possible that she may have tried something like that. My hope, my heart desire is that she would have repudiated the gods of Sheba, her ancient gods, which were basically fallen angels trying to manipulate humanity. My hope is that she repudiated all that and became a monotheist, a believer in the one and true living God. But we don't have anything in the text to indicate that that's definitely what happened. Now, there are some strange stories that get promoted out of this one incident of her visiting. One of them is that they ended up getting married. You can see that there's nothing in the text that indicates that. Nothing. There's nothing in the text that says that it didn't happen. That's true. But I think it might have been mentioned if that were the case, because she's such a prominent person. Another story goes to say that she was actually the queen of Ethiopia, which that doesn't make any sense. Sheba is named here, and we're pretty sure we know where Sheba's at. The story about her being Ethiopian has also been grabbed a hold of and said that they have a child together, and Solomon has a copy of the Ark of the Covenant made, which he puts into the temple at Israel, and then sends the original as a gift to his son by the Queen of Ethiopia, and that's why the Ark of the Covenant is in Ethiopia. No, I just reject that. That's just, no, it's way too crazy. There's no way in the world that Solomon would have done that with the original Ark. So let's just be clear about that. And none of them have really any good basis here in our scriptural story. So let's just finish the accurate information that we have here. Verse 10, then she gave the king 120 talents of gold. We've seen that number before. That's 4.5 tons. So that's many tens of millions of dollars of value of gold. And a very great quantity of spices and precious stones. So she's very rich herself, and the way that rich people show their honor toward other rich people is they give them more riches. Never again came such an abundance of spices as these that the Queen of Sheba gave to King Solomon. So she apparently brought a lot of spices with her that the writer of this section of 1 Kings says, never has that much been imported again in one moment of time. And then that's the end of her story, other than there's a mention of her by Jesus in his critiquing of how the Jews of his day were rejecting his message. And his comment was that the Queen of the South, that's how he refers to her, the Queen of the South will rise up in the judgment day and condemn this generation because she came seeking the wisdom of Solomon and found it, while this generation has the wisdom of God himself, the Son of God, and they won't resort to him. And so some people have said that that's an indicator that the Queen of Sheba is saved because she will be in the judgment day condemning others that have rejected the Messiah. And I can see going with that idea, but I don't think it's a guarantee. Let's continue in our 1 Kings chapter 10 passage, where it says that moreover, this is verse 11, moreover, the fleet of Hiram, which brought gold from Ophir, so we're back to that again, brought from Ophir a very great amount of almug wood and precious stones, so a very fine-grained wood of some sort. And the king made of the almug wood supports for the house of he who is, and for the king's house, also lyres and harps for the singers. So he made some additional decorations in the temple and palace complexes, and he made musical instruments for the singers. No such almug wood has come or been seen to this day. So again, very special and not to be repeated in this sort of quantity again. King Solomon gave to the Queen of Sheba all that she desired, whatever she asked besides what was given her by the bounty of King Solomon. So she turned and went back to her own land with her servants. So apparently Solomon turned around and gifted her a whole bunch of stuff, maybe special Israeli sort of treasures, maybe precious stones that were mined there in Israel, maybe special products of their agriculture. And so back home she went, and then that's the last we hear of her until the New Testament with Jesus. Verse 14. Now, the weight of gold that came to Solomon in 1 year was 666 talents of gold. Now, that is strange. This is the only other place besides the book of Revelation that that number appears. And it seems to be the amount of gold that came in 1 year to Solomon's coffers. It may be the peak year. Now, how much is that? Well, that's almost 50,000 pounds of gold. So that's over $4 billion worth of value in today's market. So his place is filthy rich. Besides that, which came from the explorers and from the business of the merchants, that'd be the ships heading out to Ophir, and from all the kings of the west and from the governors of the land, the west would be up into what we call Turkey and then out into the islands of the Mediterranean, and from the governors of the land, King Solomon made 200 large shields of beaten gold, 600 shekels of gold in each shield. So that's about 15 pounds for each shield. He also made 300 shields of beaten gold. These are smaller. 3 minas of gold went into each one of those, and I think that's 3.5 pounds or something of that nature. And then the king put these in the house of the forest of Lebanon. So that's the great big dining facility that has the big trunks of trees holding up the roof. It would appear that he puts them as wall decorations, but they get taken down and used in festive parades from time to time. Verse number 18. The king also made a great ivory throne and overlaid it with the finest gold. So he's importing ivory and having it carved up into this throne and has it overlaid in gold. Then he made the throne, had 6 steps, so it's up on a platform that has 6 steps coming up to it. The throne had a rounded top, or possibly it has a calf-themed top. And each side of the seat were armrests, and then there were 2 lions standing beside the armrests, while 12 lions stood there, one on each end of the step of the 6 steps. So he's got lions coming up to his throne along the steps. Amazing, full-sized, probably golden lions. And then the like of which was never seen in any kingdom. All of King Solomon's drinking vessels were of gold. All the vessels of the house of the forest of Lebanon were pure gold. None were of silver. Silver was not considered of anything of value in the days of Solomon. For the king had a fleet of ships of Tarshish at sea with a fleet of Hiram. Once every 3 years, the fleet of ships of Tarshish used to bringing gold and silver and ivory and apes and peacocks or possibly baboons. And so Solomon is absolutely stupendously wealthy, and so is the kingdom of Israel. Mark your place. We'll come back on that idea next time.